90.1 in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, and 88.1 KFCF in Fresno.
Good morning. This is Peter Phillips on KPFA at the Morning Mix Show. This morning we're going to talk about the crisis in higher education in California, and we'll have guests from each of the three college upper college systems in California, and students speaking about the crisis and how they're dealing with it on campuses, as well as a special from on privatization of higher education at the end of the show. And now the news.
I'm Max Pringle, in for Eileen Alfandary with these news headlines. Doctors and lawyers joined thousands of other workers in Cairo's Tahrir Square today, linking striking workers with anti-government protesters to create powerful new momentum for calls to oust President Hosni Mubarak. Meanwhile, the government threatened the army could crack down by imposing martial law. The protests are in their 17th day. They focused on discontent with Mubarak's 29-year monopoly on power and are now tapping into the even deeper well of anger over economic woes, including inflation, unemployment, corruption, low wages, and wide income disparities between rich and poor. Al Jazeera English reporter Ayman Mohaddin said the unions are demanding economic reforms, but could soon join the call for the Mubarak government to step aside.
Egypt has about 25 different registered syndicates and unions. If they bring their momentum and their prestige and their credibility to these protests, it is going to galvanize a huge part of the Egyptian society. Right now, what you're seeing are small movements of labor protests that are demanding better wages, better working conditions, end to corruption in many of their facilities and industries. And what they are not doing yet is they are not joining the same demands as the pro-democracy protesters, which has been an end to the presidency of Hosni Mubarak, but there is a convergence of interest.
The spread of labor unrest was in part in direct response to calls from protesters as strikers joined in the movement. But there also seemed to be another element, locals unleashing long pent-up resentment at specific symbols of the state, setting fire to the local police headquarters, the main post office, and the governor's offices. Police and the military did not intervene. The government warnings raised the prospect that the energized protests could bring in a new crackdown, despite repeated army and government promises not to try and clear protesters from their camp in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Foreign Minister Ahmed Abdul Gate warned today that the military could step in to quell the protests.
Do we want the armed forces to assume the responsibility of stabilizing the nation through imposing martial law and an army in the street, but for the army to rule, to step in, to put its prince on the scene? That would be a very dangerous possibility.
The warnings reflect growing government impatience as its own attempts to manage the crisis have failed. Mubarak has refused to step down immediately, saying he will serve out the rest of his term until September elections. India and Pakistan said today they would resume formal peace talks, but issues such as militancy and the disputed Kashmir region are likely to slow any progress toward diffusing tensions. The talks, expected to start by July, would be the first since New Delhi broke off peace negotiations after militant attacks on Mumbai in 2008. The nuclear-armed neighbors have been under pressure from the United States to resolve a rivalry that spills over into Afghanistan, complicating peace efforts there. Afghanistan's government is considering taking over the running of women's shelters, subjecting victims of domestic abuse to medical examinations and near incarceration under a proposal rights groups say is a concession to the Taliban. Critics said the draft regulation by the Ministry of Justice would hurt the limited progress made on women's rights since the overthrow of the Taliban in 2008 and appeared to be an overture to the Islamist insurgents waging war against NATO and Afghan forces. The proposals, attained by Reuters, would place all shelters under the control of the Ministry of Women's Affairs. California Governor Jerry Brown says he's dropping a plan to sell 24 state government buildings to private investors. The state has been in negotiations to sell the properties for $2.3 billion under a proposal by former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to help close the state's budget deficit. The state would have continued using the space by entering into a 20-year lease with the new owners. The nonpartisan Legislative Analyst's Office confirmed that the deal would end up costing the state $5.2 billion in rent over 20 years, likely saddling taxpayers with costs beyond whatever the state would net from the sale. Brown said that he canceled the sale because it amounted to a gigantic loan. And a state report released on Wednesday says that less than 2 months after the poorly welded San Bruno natural gas line erupted catastrophically on September 9th, PG&E was putting off inspections that could spot similar defects on several of its gas lines, including one near Santa Rosa, where the pipe was known to have numerous welding anomalies. PG&E says the sheer volume of pipes made it impossible for the company to deal with the issues in a timely manner. Weather-wise, in the Bay Area for the San Francisco Bay, it's going to be a sunny and breezy afternoon. Highs today in the upper 50s to the mid-60s. In the central San Joaquin Valley, a frost advisory is in effect until 9 a.m., giving way to afternoon sun with highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. I'm Max Pringle in for Eileen Alfandary. News headlines returns on Letters and Politics at 10 a.m.
Well, good morning. This is Peter Phillips for the Morning Mix Show from Project Censored. And we're here this morning with a group of students from Sonoma State University. We're going to focus on the devastating budget cuts that are projected for the state of California in higher education next year and what the impact, how the students are feeling about that. With me today is Acacia Downer, who's a sociology major senior at Sonoma State. Molly Ash, who's a sociology major and senior at Sonoma State. Sean McGinley, who's a Communication Global Studies major freshman, and Omari Wise, who's a freshman in Communication Studies and Broadcast. Molly, let's start with you. What are your concerns about the budget cuts here and coming forward at the CSUs? We're looking at $500 million to be cut in the California State University system in the fall. How are you feeling about that?
I would say primarily I'm concerned that students who are attending currently aren't going to be able to afford to stay, and that we'll see an increase in dropouts. Particularly, I'm concerned with the AB 540 students that are paying out of pocket on their own without the assistance of federal loans or grants, and those students are impacted very hardly when tuition increases.
So those are students that aren't able to get loans, who are undocumented, that have lived in California their entire life.
Correct, and graduated high school in California as well. So yeah, I think across the board it affects all of us, even those of us who are using grants. That's still money out of our pocket because that grant money goes to tuition rather than going to books or to rent or general survival. And when you're doing a full load, it's hard for students to work full-time and be able to pay the high cost of living in this area. So any tuition increase affects us.
Now, Acacia Downer, you're a sociology senior at Sonoma State. You've been around for 4 years in the college system. There's been increases in tuition almost every year as we've gone along. You get grant money and you've been borrowing money. Is that correct?
Yeah, I actually had to take out a loan last year because my financial aid didn't cover my tuition. So I had to actually take out a subsidized loan, which is about like almost $5,000, which eventually I'm going to have to pay back when I graduate. But that was one of my concerns, is not getting enough financial aid and then having to take out so many loans as well. And another issue was having to pay for textbooks.
Textbooks have been really going up in cost. What's the most expensive textbook you've had?
The most expensive textbook I had was about $100, which I think is ridiculous because books shouldn't be that expensive, especially for school. We're already paying so much for tuition. We're paying for room. We're paying for board. So textbooks shouldn't be that expensive.
Yeah. Sean McKinney, you're a freshman at Sonoma State. And so you've got 4 more years to get a degree, maybe even longer. Are you worried it's going to take longer?
Yeah, definitely. Like, especially if fees are increasing every year, it's kind of scary because they're already like really expensive. And I have friends that go to CSUs and UCs throughout California, And some of them have already, it's only been one semester that we've all been in college, and some of them are already going back home and going to the junior college where it's less expensive. And now that more people are going to the junior colleges, those are getting overcrowded and getting more expensive.
There's actually wait lists at a lot of junior colleges,
You used to never see that, you know. So it's scary.
Do you think you'll be able to graduate in 4 years?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. Yeah.
I mean, I'm a double major, so it already makes it longer. And it's very, very difficult to get GEs.
Can I second that? Because this is actually my fifth year. And I've been here because it wasn't enough GE classes offered within a certain amount of time. And so I had to actually extend my time here. And actually, this is my fifth year being at Sonoma State. So
Acacia, and you're from Oakland, right? So you're driving up for class.
So I also commute because of tuition. And also boarding, because not enough housing, I feel. So I also commute from Oakland. Takes an hour drive to get here for me to go to classes. And, yeah.
Omari Wise, you're a freshman in communication studies, broadcast major. Welcome.
Yes.
Tell us your concerns about budget cuts and what it's like to go to the CSU.
My concerns is that it'll just keep rising. I can't afford textbooks already. The most expensive textbook I've had to purchase was about around $200. I mean, I just feel it's ridiculous for a textbook. We already have to pay for tuition fees, room and board. And I mean, to have to pull out an extra probably around $500 for textbooks just for a semester. Just for a semester. That's ridiculous.
Had I not gotten used textbooks this year, it would have cost me $600 to get all the books for my classes.
And that's you're a communication studies major, right,
yeah,
Sean?
And
so
I'm not even in my major yet. I'm just with the GE.
You're freshmen looking at what's going on here, thinking about how it's going to be the next 3, 4, 5 years to get a degree and hanging in there.
And I hope to graduate with my bachelor's degree in 4 years.
Well, good luck. Under current circumstances, you'll be going maybe year-round, but we wish you good luck. Now, let's go back to Molly Ash. We did some research at Sonoma State. Several students participated in this, and we looked at the Republicans in the state legislature.
Yes.
And we looked both at the Senate and the Assembly, and it seems that here we have people who are saying no new taxes.
Correct.
They're going to block the budget increases. And what did you find out in regards to those people and their involvement in public education?
We found that 2/3 of them benefited from public education in the state of California. That's really a depressing figure, to know that they benefited from lower tuition costs, what the state had to offer at that time, and now they're proposing to increase tuition for the next generation.
Or maybe even make it impossible to go to college.
Certainly. One thing that we did find is maybe about 4 of them actually didn't attend college. I found that interesting. Didn't attend college whatsoever. And I did wonder if maybe that sort of sentiment makes people think that you don't necessarily need a degree to make it, therefore, you know, whatever, it shouldn't affect us. And I don't know. I found there, you know, there were some of them that attended private colleges, and I think those people might also feel less inclined to care about the state schools. But then the 2/3 that did attend in the state of California, that's really depressing, that they're not showing any sort of loyalty to what would have been their fellow students.
So we have Republicans in the Assembly, I'm sure Democrats too,
sure,
who benefited from no tuition costs 20 years ago.
Yes.
At the colleges in California, public universities, who are now in the power of making laws and closing the doors to this generation and future generations of students.
Yes, they are. And it's really short-sighted on their part, I think, because they're hurting the state in that we're going to have fewer people graduating college, which means fewer innovative thinkers in the workforce that have the skill sets to better our economy. And I think that hurts us in the long run. Plus, when we go to vote, we're going to bear in mind how they voted for us. And certainly that will affect them as well.
Individually, for each of the students here today, Sean, what are your strategies for dealing with these devastating cuts faced in higher education?
I mean, you know, it's scary because here I am, a freshman. As a senior, I had so many ideas of, like, I was going to go off to college and do great things. And here I am as a freshman, really legitimately thinking of other options. Like, what if I cannot attend Sonoma State anymore? Do I go back to school? Do I go back home and go to junior college? Do I try and get into the workforce? Do I go to vocational? I mean, what do I do? What do I do if I can't stay here at Sonoma State anymore?
Those are big questions. Well, Acacia, you're a senior, and so you're probably going to make it and graduate by next December was your goal.
Well, my thing is, I'm just ready to graduate just because I had, like I said, this is my fifth year, and I wanted to graduate and, you know, attend with my other classmates and whatnot. But because not enough general education units were offered, I had to actually spend an extra year here. So my thing is, if it was possible, just even before I leave, to make somehow go about it in a way where I can mention that, okay, we actually, you know, make an announcement that textbooks need to be a little bit less expensive, or if you're going to have these expensive textbooks, at least, you know, offer financial aid a little bit earlier so students have the time to go out and get their textbooks before class. Because knowing with me, I kind of had to wait till last minute to get my textbook because my financial aid didn't come through but a few days before class actually started. So that's kind of one of my concerns. But also with the whole commuting, I already have to come out the pocket to pay for bridge. I have to pay for parking on campus when I commute up here. So I'm just really ready just to graduate, hopefully in December. So I would, the commuting and the paying for bridge and gas would be less on myself.
Any last words from you, Molly?
Yeah, well, I guess I would just like to add that though I'm graduating this semester, and I've applied to graduate schools, most of the graduate schools I've applied to have been overseas, and the cost of tuition here has been taken into consideration when making those choices. And as a parent of three, certainly with my oldest, my 13-year-old, I thought, I don't think at this point my husband and I can afford to send her to school in California.
Well, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Acacia Downer, Molly Ash, Sean McKinney, and Omari Wise, thank you so much for being with us this morning. And we'll take a short music break. Well, welcome back, and thank you to the students for telling us the situation at the California State Universities. With me in studio is Dr. Annie Merrifield, who's professor of political science at Sonoma State University. He's also president of our California Faculty Association on our campus, and he's vice president of the Faculty Association statewide. Joining us on the line is Susan Meisenhelder, who's a past president of the California Faculty Association and English professor emeritus at Cal State San Bernardino. Susan, are you there? Susan?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Good morning, Susan.
Andy's here with us today. Now, you're both professors at Sonoma State, at the CSU. One of the big things is that there's going to be, we're looking at a $500 million cut in the CSU system next fall. That's a big number that they're saying. I think there's some impacts that are going to be significant. How's this going to impact instruction? How many students are going to be left out? What's the situation?
Well, you mentioned the $500 million. Just to put a little perspective on that, it is almost 20% of the state general fund allocation for the CSU in the current year. So, you know, it's not around the margins. It's a big, big hit. And, you know, it comes on a whole series of years of hits, and there really is nothing you can cut at this point that doesn't hurt students just terribly. We'll certainly argue, you know, this should be the last thing, but people are prepared that, you know, there will be, faculty who will be let go. That will mean an even worse situation from the one the students described. Fewer classes for them, longer times to graduate. Just this past year, the CSU cut 10,420 sections. So, you know, that was classes that students could not get into, and it's no wonder it takes them longer to graduate. We don't have an exact number on the number of students who are denied access, but when the chancellor has talked about it, he has talked about it in the ballpark of tens of thousands of students who have been denied access to the CSU during this crisis, despite the fact that they were promised all throughout their you know, middle and high school careers, that if they took the right courses and did well, there would be a place for them. So it really is tragic for thousands and thousands of students who had every expectation of a CSU education.
Susan, this is Andy. Does it look like the state of California really is just simply abandoning?
Hello?
Susan, can you hear me?
Susan?
Hello?
Susan, can you hear me?
Hi. Susan, Andy was trying to speak to you. Can you hear me now? Susan?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Andy was going to ask... Does this look like the state of California is abandoning the current college students, the next generation of students? What can be done about that?
Does this look like, I missed just a little
that
bit.
That we're abandoning future students in terms of access to public education, college degrees, that
right.
Only a certain percent are going to get in.
Right. If I were a student, I would certainly, or a potential student in the CSU, I would certainly feel abandoned. I mean, as the students pointed out, those of us who are older than they are, most of us benefited from reasonably funded public education in this state, and we're not providing it to that generation, to the up and coming generation. You know, I do think it is clear in the CSU, and I think if you drive on a freeway, it's clear for other aspects of California's infrastructure. If we don't work on the revenue side of the crisis that we're facing, there's no future for these students or any other Californians for that matter. So I think the governor's on the right track to at least start a conversation about a revenue piece to getting us out of this problem. And it's a long time coming, but sorely needed.
So Susan, what are the prospects? Where do we stand? We going back to the 1960s, the higher education plan in the state of California guaranteed access to the CSUs for the upper third of high school graduates. Are we just completely abandoning that, and are we moving more in a direction of privatized education?
Well, I think we're abandoning it if you just look at the basic numbers. Some of the legislators and some of the people on this phone perhaps benefited from essentially free public higher education in the state of California. These students have looked at tuition increases over 200% since 2002. So, the notion that, it's openly accessible to the top third of the class has been abandoned some time ago. But even at any price, we're on the verge of simply not providing the courses that students need and the support services they need to do well and to be the next generation of nurses and teachers and social workers that this state is going to need.
Susan Meisenhelder, you're past president of the California Faculty Association, and over the years there's been cuts, and there's always been battles about where these cuts are going to occur, and presidents on campuses will say something like, oh, we're not going to lay off any permanent people, which means that primarily it's going to be lecturers and part-time faculty that get laid off. Of course, this impacts students more. So how is this big cut, how is the allocations looking in terms of how presidents are going to make decisions and how the CSU system is going to allocate these cuts? Will administrators be laid off?
Well, that's a good question. I think it'll be a political struggle internally, with the cuts to make sure that the choices are made that impact students the least. And obviously we're very concerned about, if students can't get classes and there are not people to teach them, there's no way they can make progress towards their degrees. So that's one concern that we've not heard about administrators being laid off, but we've seen over 3,200 faculty members leave in the last 3 years or be sent packing in the last 3 years. So it is a priorities question. The other thing we're concerned about and starting to hear rumblings about is dealing with the budget cuts by eliminating whole programs. And we do feel this is extremely short-sighted, and I can give you a couple of examples of just how short-sighted it is. the Humboldt campus apparently has been talking about eliminating the nursing program at Humboldt State University. It is the only place for nurses to get trained in, I don't know how many hundreds of miles of that community. So if that decision is made, there will be no place to train nurses in a huge and pretty remote part of the state. That's not a good priority. Other campuses are talking about doing away with Spanish programs and foreign language programs at the very moment that we're seeing, you know, the clear signs that, you know, we're part of a global economy. Our students need to be prepared to compete, as does the state, globally. But, you know, it's a choice that's being contemplated. And we feel, you know, it's very, very short-sighted in its, you know, in thinking about what our priorities should be and what we need for the long term.
Susan Meisenhelder, thank you very much. You're with the California past president of the California Faculty Association. We really appreciate having you with us this morning.
Thanks so much.
Andy Merrifield, do you have any quick comments on Susan's statement as vice president of CFA statewide?
Well, I think the key points that she made is the destruction of programs unless they have tons of people, not taking into consideration the value of them. Nonprofit programs may not be huge, but they're vital to the community. Asian study programs may not be huge, but they're vital to the community. The short-sightedness, not only from an economic standpoint, but the short-sightedness for what makes up California is critically important. So I think making sure that the cuts are allocated properly to protect the students and quality education is a really key factor that Susan pointed out.
Joining us on the line now is Professor Stan Glantz. He's a professor of medicine at UC San Francisco. He's vice president of the University of California Faculty Association. Stan and Professor Glantz, you heard the statements from Susan that there were 10,000 section cuts, mm-hmm. and tens of thousands of students are not going to be able to access the CSU. What's happening at the UC?
Well, it's about the same. We've actually done the arithmetic, and if Governor Brown's cuts go through, in order to maintain the current quality, of which the current, as Susan said, reduced quality that the students are getting at their higher prices, we'd have to cut the UC student enrollment by 17%, about 35,000 or 40,000 students. That would be like eliminating the freshman class. Our arithmetic shows that Cal State, they would have to reduce enrollment by 19% to absorb their cut, about 64,000, 65,000 students, and 10% of the community college students. And what we have here is an example of just taking the California Master Plan for Higher Education that the earlier speakers were talking about, which has really been the key for social improvement and economic growth in the state since the 60s, and slamming it into reverse. Because instead of, you know, a place for any student who's worked hard enough to get it, an appropriate place at a community college or Cal State or UC, it's being shoved into reverse. As people are being shoved out of UC, they're being pushed into the community or into the state college system, which is already over-enrolled given the budget cuts, which is then pushing those people down into the community colleges. And then the people who would normally use the community colleges to get on the up escalator are being just left in the basement. And I think that's just putting a little bit of more specifics to what Susan said. The situation at UC is essentially the same as you heard it for the state colleges. Programs are being drastically cut, and some of them are just shutting themselves down. UC's primary distinction from the state college system is that we're supposed to be providing graduate education in addition to undergraduate education. And I was at UC Santa Barbara a few months ago, and they're anticipating that their graduate program in history is just going to disappear because the budget cuts and the fee increases have basically made it impossible for students to do the work. And here at UCSF, which is viewed as somewhat insulated from these cuts because we're a medical center and have a lot of other monies coming in through clinical services, our graduate programs have shrunk by a third already, and they're probably going to shrink by more. And the other problem is, you know, it takes a very, very, very long time to build the kind of high quality, broadly accessible higher education system we've had here in California. And I'm, again, talking about the whole system, not just UC. And, you know, once it starts to deteriorate, which is happening, it's very hard to reverse that. I've talked to colleagues on the East Coast at what would be considered second-tier schools who say people are UC faculty are trying to get in there because they see UC as a sinking ship right now.
Stan, can I ask you a question? This is Andy. It's nice to talk to you. I appreciate your precise and absolutely frightening numbers about cuts and things as projected. Looking at the UC, if they allocated the cuts differently, if they went after some of the managerial groups and things like that, what kind of savings could they get out of that so they could preserve some of that, reduce some of that 35,000 students?
I think that the executive compensation at UC is a scandal, as it is at Cal State. It's a slightly smaller scandal. It's obnoxious. It's unethical. It's embarrassing. But if you add up the dollars, it's not that much. And the fact is that the real costs of education are putting professors and lecturers in front of students, giving them the time to actually grade the students' work. It's the same everywhere. And that's where the money is. And, I chaired the budget committee for the whole UC system a few years ago, and we went after this administrative bloat question. But when you actually look at the dollars, you know, it might be $100 million, but we've already had a couple of $1 billion in cuts. And I think the reason, there are other reasons that we need to get this administrative nightmare under control, having to do with fighting off privatization. And I notice you have a speaker talking about that later, about issues of just simple equity, about the fact that these ridiculous salaries and pensions outrage the public and undermine support for the entire system. But, you know, while I'm all for bringing those salaries under control, it's not the solution. The only solution to restoring high quality public higher education in California is to get the state money back. It's the only solution. And it's not even that expensive. We've done a little arithmetic on that. And if you wanted to push the reset button on the whole system, roll the fees back to where they were in the year 2000, and return state funding per student to where it was in 2000, and fund all the thousands and thousands of students who are now being locked out, and you did that with an income tax surcharge, what do you think that would cost the median taxpayer in California? Give me a guess.
Well, I've read your report,
so you
Stan,
can't
so I know that. Well, maybe Andy Merrifield, vice president of the faculty at the CSU, can take a guess at it.
Well, I would say it's probably less than a couple of $100 a year.
$32.
Okay, well.
And that's $32 for a tax return. So if you're married, it's $16 a person. And the cost to put the whole system back together, it's just not that much money. And the problem we have is the issue of taxes has become such an abstraction that nobody's willing to say what would it cost to actually fix things. And it's not that much money. And, you know, what I've been trying to do for the last couple of years is to get people talking about that. That, yes, we have to get the executive salaries under control, because without it, people don't have confidence in the system. I can tell you, the faculty here are just as outraged about it as the faculty everywhere else. But we need to go to Brown, and it really is Brown and the governor, because all three of these sectors basically play to the governor and then blame the legislature. And just, you know, we had demonstrations. We had hundreds of thousands of students in the streets, and that forced Schwarzenegger to put the money back, or some of the money back. And I think the same thing needs to happen now. Well, this can be fixed. You know, Brown is talking about a tax increase or a tax extension, whatever you want to call it, and they should tack on a little bit more to put the system back together. It's eminently doable. And it's the only solution. You can't fundraise your way out of it. You can't cut bureaucrats out of it. I mean, cutting bureaucrats would help a little bit, but that's not where, that won't, it's not enough money.
Well, I certainly agree that the salaries are outrageous, but and cutting the bureaucrats isn't going to do it alone, and I certainly agree about the taxes. But I did want to mention, for example, at the California State University, we have a 9 times as big an increase in the number of managers as we do tenure-track faculty, and a greater increase in the number of new managers than we do students. So there's a sort of crony capitalist model.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. And we have the same problem at UC, where we are approaching having one administrator for every faculty member in the UC system. It's outrageous. But I've done the math. I mean, as you can tell, I do math. I teach statistics. And, you know, it is a problem that has to be solved. But I think to tell the public that the solution to these huge cuts is just cleaning up the administration, it's just not correct. I mean, it's part of the solution. It's maybe 15-20% of the solution.
I absolutely agree. I just think that while we're doing triage, I think we can't lose track of that.
Oh, no.
Taxes are the answer. You're right, Stan.
No, I'm totally not arguing with you. I totally agree. In fact, the UC Faculty Association's program, and we have a website that has all of this stuff on it called KeepCaliforniasPromise.org. We think that part of the deal that higher ed needs to make with the governor and with the people of California is that in exchange for pushing the reset button, rolling the fees back, and returning funding to where it was in 2000, we have to get this administrative bloat under control, and we have to return the salaries of the administration to ones that are appropriate for public institutions, not private institutions.
Stan Glantz, professor of medicine at UCSF and vice president of UC Faculty Association, thank you so much for being on with us. We really appreciate getting an update on what's happening. Bringing us forward now, we have on the air with us John McDowell, who is a professor at the L.A. Trade Technical College, one of our junior colleges in the state of California. And he's also president of the Faculty Association of California Community Colleges. John, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Well, thanks for having me on the program.
Thank you, John, for being on. And with me in studio is Andy Merrifield. He's vice president of the California Faculty Association. He's been helping with the discussion this morning. What's going on at the community college level?
Well, let me just say a quick word about the system. You know, we are 112 colleges statewide with 2.75 million students, the majority of whom are people of color, including almost 800,000 Latino students. One out of every three Latino students in higher education in the United States is in a California community college. We are at a crisis point in our system. I want to start with access. You know, we still are an open door system in theory, but in fact, last year we suffered $538 million of cuts, 40% cuts in programs that help economically disadvantaged students, disabled, and other vulnerable populations. And we, for the first time in the history of our system, turned away about 140,000 students, most of whom, 133,000 of which, were first-time attenders. And that is a crisis. That should never happen. That's our biggest problem, I think, right there. If the governor's budget holds, and I will credit him for trying to solve the problem with a combination of possible revenue increases and cuts, but if those cuts that are proposed now for all three of our systems of higher education, and for community colleges, that's $400 million, if that holds, we'll probably turn away twice as many students as we did last year, unless, like the unemployed, they stop coming to our colleges and simply give up altogether.
John, this is, I think, tragic news. Between the three systems, it sounds like there's going to be in excess of 200,000 students in the fall that won't get into college, who are eligible to go to college. And you're saying it's the most vulnerable, the lowest income, Latinos, blacks, students and disabled that are often go to the community college to start are not going to have access. You've got waiting lists at the JCs across the state. Where are we going with this? What's happening here?
Well, I have to say that I was on a conference call with the governor's people early on after this budget was proposed, and we were told when both the state chancellor and I argued that we can't find economies and cuts that make sense. They told us, you know, you can find efficiencies and we expect you to find economies. We educate students at $5,200 per year per full-time student. That's among the very lowest in the nation of any system of higher education. And I have to say, there are inefficiencies. There are things that need to be cut. I would never argue that. But not in a system that's that close to the edge on funding. We are at, I know you've been talking about the rolling back to the year 2000. We are receiving less funding now per student adjusted for inflation than we did in the year 2000. And student fees have gone up as well and are being proposed to go even higher. So we're a system that's really running on the edge. And how have we done that? We've done it by increasing our ranks of part-time faculty who are, you know, underpaid, who seldom have benefits or few benefits. Class size has mushroomed. Literally, here at Trade Tech, where I teach, every seat is taken in every classroom. Students are sitting on the floor. We've begun asking faculty to not let students in a situation where they're, you know, they break the fire code. So that's why students are being turned away. There just aren't seats enough. That's a crisis again.
Can I want, John, this is Andy again. I wanted to ask a question that we're asking others, all of the three of you today, and that is there just a simple abandonment of all, not only are we harming our current students, but abandoning huge chunks of our future students in California? And as a follow-up to that, since you have mentioned the number of people that are first-generation, underrepresented, et cetera, I'm assuming from what you said that this will disproportionately impact people of color, first generation, and other underrepresented and traditionally oppressed groups.
Well, that's correct, and if I may just flesh out those numbers a bit, and these are round numbers, these are last year, and they change each year, but last year we educated 200,000 African-American students, 500,000 Asian Pacific Island Americans, as well as that many Latinos. Half our population, student population, are people of color, and many of them are students who would not be able to access higher education at all, except for the community colleges. So understand, being the largest system of higher ed in the nation, we are the main point of access for most people to a higher education. And, of course, many of the students that you have at the Cal State system and at UC do transfer from community colleges and are very successful in those efforts. So if we are forced to cut back, and by the way, there have been tens of thousands of sections cut, part-timers set dispatch that aren't working, who should be teaching, and really as a system, we really have no choice, and it will hurt not only the individuals, but I think what California has lost and what the nation has failed to refocus on is the value to our society of educating people, the value to the economy. If you're going to have a strong and vibrant economy, if you're going to have a population of workers that are well-trained and educated, we have to have the doors open to higher education. And I do believe we have seen a recent, in the last 10 or actually 20 years, abandonment of the mission of higher education in California. I, you know, was fortunate to begin my my college attendance in 1962, shortly after the passage of the master plan at University of California, in fact, and it was free. All three systems of higher education were free and remained largely free up until about 1990 or so. And at that point, without any debate or comments from the public, without even a legislative vote ever, slowly but surely, the systems of higher ed have been progressively abandoned, and the cost of higher education shifted from taxpayers to students, and many students leaving both the University of California and Cal State burdened with heavy debt after receiving an education. And that is not good for our society, and it doesn't bode well for the future. And I think we need to recapture that vision of educating students for a strong economy and for a strong democracy.
John, John McDowell, you're president of the Faculty Association of Community Colleges, which is the largest community college system in the country. California's ESU system is the largest university system in the country. So in a sense, it's California is sort of leader in terms of public higher education nationwide. What we're hearing is that from the money that it would take is only $32 per tax return on average for people in the state of California to bring the system back to full access. And so it's not that much. Yet I don't know if you heard the earlier segment with our students in the beginning, but they actually took a look at the Republicans in the Assembly and the Senate and found that two-thirds of the Republicans who were saying no new taxes
That's correct.
Actually went to CSU, LA, Cal Poly, right down all this, all UC Davis, you know, and took advantage of that like you did. It was free. I got my master's degree. It was free. And now we're closing the doors to a whole future generation. Is this national? Are we looking at this as a national policy?
Well, it is a national problem, and I just want to reference the GI Bill, which where the U.S. taxpayers paid for the cost of education for 8 million returning World War II veterans. The estimate is that the return on that investment of tax dollars was $7 for every dollar spent. And in fact, a higher education today in California, for every dollar that the state spends, there's a $3 return. So the long-term solution to our budget crisis is to educate more people, to fund education and to educate more people. And I want to just add one thing before time is up, and that is about the schizophrenia of the voters, so-called. You know, the idea that they want services and programs protected, yet they don't want to pay taxes. I don't believe that's true, even though I know the polling data. In 1999, voters approved an initiative to reduce the threshold to pass construction bonds in K-12 and community colleges to 55%. And since then, in the community colleges alone, voters have approved more than $20 billion of bond money for community college construction and renovation. And in fact, you'll see throughout our system some construction going on, renovation going on. And the tragedy is that the voters have approved these bonds, and we now have the spaces, the classrooms and the laboratories for more students. And they're there and need and want an education, but yet we can't hire the instructors to teach them. And I do think it's a national crisis, and I think we've got to return to the realization that an education is good for all, good for individuals, good for our society, and good for our economy. So we need to invest in education. And I think if voters are given a chance in June, if the Republicans will simply allow that to go on the ballot, I do believe we have a good chance of convincing them if voters realize that a lot of those monies will be going into education, and that is where the state spends most of its dollars, that they will approve that and get us back on track again.
Well, I wanted to make one comment about what you have been saying, John. This is Andy again. And also what Stan has been saying and what Susan's been saying. And the overall package is that we are abandoning democracy by doing penny-wise, pound-foolish budget cutting. This is bad for the economy. This is horrible for the state of California. And this is really very bad for the people that are trying to get into the system. And it seems to me that if we encapsulate what you're saying and add it to what Stan and Susan said, that's sort of the general message of what is happening with the abandonment of the master plan in public higher education. I want to thank Peter for the opportunity to bring the three of you on to make that point.
Thank you.
And really appreciate you being with us, John, and we'll go to a short music break.
Thank you very much.
Okay, welcome back to the Morning Mix Show. This is Peter Phillips of Project Censored from Sonoma State University. And with me in studio is Andy Merrifield, who's a professor of political science and vice president of the California Faculty Association statewide. Bringing on the line now is Danny Wild. He's a professor of philosophy at the Allen Hancock Junior College. He's been an adjunct there for 16 years. He started the part-time faculty association union there. He's also the author of several books on higher education, Vouchers of the Privatization of Education. He's an investigative reporter. Welcome, Danny, to the Morning Mix Show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Philip. I appreciate it.
One of the big questions is, are we going to abandon public higher education in the state of California, continuing to move to a more privatized system, or are we going to reverse that and go back to California's winning strategy of access for all students? And we're looking at maybe 200,000 students in the fall who won't get in. So I guess they could try to find a private college and enroll and pay a lot of money. What's happening with privatization of higher ed in the U.S.?
Well, to answer your question specifically, yes, we are abandoning public education, and not just in the state of California, within the United States in general. And I think it's important to kind of see a lot of this in macroeconomics. We have had nothing since the Reagan economics but the public being told that the government is bad, that it can't do anything for people, and therefore, of course, we still have a corporate health care system. Now, we've had a public education system, which could be compared to what could be called the public option for education, and the role of government under neoliberalism is basically to destroy any public option and to move the entire game over into the private sector. And that's what we've been seeing. Just some really good work has been done by the leftist Business Observer. They've come up with some staggering statistics. Since 1980, just inflation-wise, if you look at the Consumer Price Index, it's up about 179%. For medical care, since 1980, we have inflation up about 436%. But when we look at college tuition and fees in the nation, we have an 827% increase in inflation. Now, you ask yourself, why is college going up so high? And the answer, which many of your guests have said, is because we are now bankrupting, or doing what Grover Norquist said, drowning the government in a bathtub. And basically, we've cut 19% revenue for just one university, University of Virginia. They used to get 33% of their budget from the state in 1989. That went down to 12% in 2009. And so there's no more state money there. So the issue is why is there no more state money? Well, under capitalism, Peter, education is little more than an exchange value. It's like selling hot dogs. I mean, the elite who run the system that we live in have no interest in having working people have a critical thinking education, and they don't want them to think critically about the lives that they live, the governments that they operate under, and the economics that they're forced to deal with. And so as a result, there's no premium on educating them. It's warehousing them, a surplus population of people that will never work in the United States as we outsource more and more jobs and as technology under capitalism puts more and more people out of work. And so we're seeing a starving of the budgets. And the answer is not to come back to the taxpayers and ask them for more money. This is a losing proposition, and it can't win. So just in closing, to let you go on, we can make higher education completely free in the United States. It accounts for 2% of the GDP in this country, which is 3 months of Pentagon spending. So if we didn't have 3 months of Pentagon spending, we could make education completely free in the United States for every student.
So we're just talking about cutting the Pentagon spending by a quarter, and we would be, and that's the cost of the wars. I guess that's what you're saying. Andy, did you want to jump in here?
Well, I was going to ask Danny, how can we do this at, since you're talking more globally than just the tragedy in the state of California, how can we do this? How can we apply pressure at the national level? I know that the California Faculty Association, the CSU, the UC and the community college systems in California worked with people from all over the nation to put together a conference to look at public higher education. What would you advise people who are trying to look at this at the national level to do? Is there any access to the Obama administration? Is there any access to the Democratic leadership in Congress? I mean, where can we go with this?
Well, I think the first thing that's important to do is that we need to revitalize our unions. And that means that, for example, at Allen Hancock Junior College, where I'm a teacher, where we have a part-time faculty union, we need to be forming alliances with other public service sector workers. And so that AFSCME, for example, is facing massive cutoffs. There's an entire complete a war going on against public unions in this country. We need to all be allied. And that's not what's going on. what's going on is education. We organize over here, and in health, we organize over there, and county employees over organize over here, because we're not understanding the system that we work within. And that is a capitalist system that has one issue, and it's to increase profit shares for a few elite on Wall Street. And they have taken over the educational industry as another bubble, like the real estate industry. They are closing up these public institutions because they're driving these students into for-profit universities where they will then take out loans from the federal government, turn those loans straight over to the public universities and the private universities, and the private universities are now living off of a drip line from the government. 90% of their profits come from us, the taxpayers, when it should be going into public education. So until we begin to understand the macroeconomics of this thing, we're not going to be able to take any steps forward other than liberal solutions, which simply do not work. And taxpayers, especially increasingly older ones, are not going to want to increase their taxes year after year to keep hospital open, to keep schools open. We need a national strategy, and that means working on the ground, organizing alliances, taking those alliances to Washington, and making huge demands on the Obama administration and pointing out to the fact to the American public that government is not bad. In fact, your early listeners had done research. These politicians, these coin-operated politicians, are receiving public benefit of education. They're getting public health care, and they're telling us we can't have public health and we can't have public education, and they're forcing us into privatized systems where right now $829 billion in student loans is now could go into default. And that's more than the credit cards.
Hey, Danny, we're almost out of time. I really appreciate you taking the time with me and Andy Merrifield today on KPFA. Danny's a award winner from Project Censored this year. He blogs on the Censored blog and has done great work, particularly around the Washington Post's ownership of Kaplan Universities and their attempt to privatize around the world. But we've got to move forward, so thank you very much for being on with us this morning, Danny, and we're going to close out the Morning Mix show.
Thanks so much, and thanks to your listeners.
The next KPFA local board station meeting will be held Saturday, February 12th, from 11 to 4 at the North Berkeley Senior Citizen Center, 1901 Hearst Avenue at Martin Luther King Way. The meeting is open to the public and is wheelchair accessible. KPFA's Winter Fund Drive starts next Monday, February 14th, and you listeners will sponsor the KPFA by answering phones. We need people to come in the morning and help out as volunteers, so call 848-6767, extension 206, if you can come in and volunteer. And a quick announcement tonight, the movie Oil Apocalypse is going to be showing at the Grand Lake Theater, 3200 Grand Avenue, starting at 7 p.m. with Dr. Ricky Ott, $10 to $20 sliding scale fee, the legacy of the Exxon Valdez. Thank you very much. This is KPFA, KPFB in Fresno, in Berkeley, and 81.1 KFCF in Fresno. Thank you very much.
This is a listing of upcoming events in the Bay Area for the week ending February 20th. All events are wheelchair accessible. Please listen closely for contact numbers. On Thursday, February 17th at 7 p.m., the San Mateo County History Museum presents the premiere of The Last Train from Bay Meadows, a documentary film about the famed Bay Area racetrack. The screening takes place at the Fox Theater, 2215 Broadway in Redwood City. Admission is $10. For details, call 650-299-0104. On Thursday, February 17th at 7 p.m., Sonoma State University presents a lecture on slavery and literacy by author Jamaica Kincaid in the Green Music Center Main Hall, 1801 East Cotati Avenue in Rohnert Park. Admission is free, but advance tickets are required. For details or to get tickets, call 707-664-2382. On Saturday, February 19th, from 12 noon to 6 p.m., the Journal of Pan-African Studies presents a free Black History Month poetry reading and book fair featuring local authors at the Joyce Gordon Gallery, 406 14th Street in Oakland. For details, call 510-465-8928. The community calendar is produced by members of the KPFA Apprenticeship Program. Send your listing at least 3 weeks in advance to KPFA Box 51, 1929 Martin Luther King Jr. Way in Berkeley, California, 94704. Fax them to 510-848-3812 or email us at calendar@kpfa.org. Tell us if your event is wheelchair accessible. To hear this calendar again, call 510-848-6767, extension 621. This calendar is also online at kpfa.org.